is the podcast of the Leeds Centre for Dante Studies. Key moments of the Commedia number 4, Purgatorio Canto 4, lines 19 to 30. I want in this item to focus on a brief moment of description, one that seems to be quite inconsequential at first, but is in fact, as I hope we'll see, full of resonance and interest. The passage comes as Dante the Pilgrim and Virgil are beginning to climb Mount Purgatory, and they enter a passageway which is both extremely narrow and extremely steep. So we're still in anti-purgatory, we're not yet in purgatory proper, and the two travellers have met in the previous canto the excommunicated, those who had been excluded from the church, who have to wait here in anti-purgatory before they're admitted to purgatory proper. And in a moment we're about to meet the souls of the negligent, and the pilgrim's going to encounter his friend Bellacqua. It's a humorous, quite sort of matey, chatty conversation that takes place between the two of them. But what I want to think about is the way in which Dante describes this passageway. Let's read the piece of text I'm interested in. It's Canto 4, lines 19 to 30.
Maggiore aperta molte volte in pruna con una forcatella di sue spine l'uom della villa quando l'uva in bruna che non era la calla onde saline lo duca mio e io appresso soli come da noi la schiera si partine vassi in San Leo e discendesi in Noli montasi su in Bismantova e in Cacume con esso i pie ma qui convien con voli dico con l'ale snelle e con le piume del gran disio diretto a quel condotto che Speranza mi dava e facea lume.
And let me read the translation by Robin Kirkpatrick, published by Penguin. A farmer, when the grapes are growing dark, with one scant forkful of his hedging thorn, will often stuff a wider gap than this, that corridor through which my lord and guide now climbed, I, following behind, alone, since all the company by now had gone. San Leo you can scale, edge down to Noli, climb to Bismantova, ascend Cacume. Feet serve you there, but here you need to fly, with quickening wings, I mean, and pinions of great desire, behind that leading on that offers me all hope and gives me light. Now, the gist of what Dante is saying is actually very simple. The passageway is steep and narrow. And in one sense, the way he describes it is also quite simple. Dante calls to mind the way in which farmers would block off an opening in the hedge around their vineyard with thorns at the time when their grapes were ripening to protect them. It's a perfectly simple, everyday image. And to describe the steepness, Dante compares it to a range of places, San Leo, Noli, Bismantova, Cacume. Then Dante moves on to a more abstract way of describing what's happening. He says that here in purgatory one must fly with the swift wings and pinions of great desire, following the guide, che speranza mi dava e facea lume, which gave me hope and made light. Now, listening to that last podcast item on the gate into hell, the one which dealt with Inferno, Canto 3, it strikes me that this description of the passage towards purgatory actually gives us some quite obvious contrasts with the entry into hell. On the gateway into hell, as Claire discussed in that item, those who pass through the gate are instructed to abandon hope, lasciate ogni speranza, and the dominant tone is darkness. The words are written in a dark colour. Here, however, Virgil is a guide who gives hope and light. So even though this is a physically difficult passage to walk through, the tone in which the passageway is described is very different from that of the entry into hell. The difficulty is in some way shaped or informed by hope. This, I think, already signals one of the key aspects of Dante's conception of purgatory. when we reach purgatory proper, of course we haven't reached there yet, but when we do reach that, we'll find that it's not a place where souls suffer pain passively, but it's a place of moral change. The souls in purgatory itself progress up the mountain by purging themselves. Unlike the souls in hell, the souls in purgatory itself are actually aware of their failings on earth. They accept the suffering that they undergo willingly. Of course, here we aren't yet in purgatory proper. We're in anti-purgatory. And if we think Dante sounds a bit pious and goody-two-shoes, talking about how he was flying up the mountain with his great desire, then the poem itself seems to recognise this too, for in a moment we're about to meet Bellacqua, who'll make his own sarcastic comments about Virgil and the pilgrim's haste, and he'll also make the pilgrim smile, as well as making us, the readers, smile. Bellacqua, who's going to be very carefully observed by Dante's poetry, crouching down, barely lifting his head to speak to them, both forms a contrast with Virgil and the pilgrim, and also reminds us that the physical body is absolutely fundamental to Dante's poem. I think that this is a very important aspect of these lines already. If you think about lines 25 to 30, it might seem at first that they're saying that whereas you can go up and down mountains in Italy, here you go on the wings of desire. And we might be tempted to suggest that Dante wants us to imagine in these lines that the journey up to purgatory, or through purgatory, which is also, of course, a journey towards God, is a spiritual journey. It's not one to do with the body. And the passage does indeed allude to the Neoplatonic idea of the wings of the soul, which is ascending to God, an idea which is going to be developed as we move through the poem. But actually, I think there's rather more going on than that here. I think what we're actually being reminded of here is that spiritual and physical life go together. Right after the idea of the wings of desire, in the lines which directly follow the passage we're talking about here, Dante reminds us, states in lines 31 to 33, this is, that they need to clamber with both feet and hands. Okay, so it's returning us to the physicality of the journey. Let's think for a moment about this list of places which you can climb and descend in Italy. All of them, apart from Bismantova, can be quite easily identified as real places in Italy, identifiable places in Italy. We aren't quite sure where Bismantova is. Now, there's part of me that would love to be able to dig out some symbolic meaning behind the choice of places which Dante names here, as though Dante had written some sort of cryptic crossword clue or some sort of Dan Brown-style Da Vinci code for us to work out. Well, if he has, I'm not personally capable of working it out. And besides, I think it might be missing the point if we try and hunt for a hidden meaning here. Instead, I think what we ought to be paying attention to is the way in which Dante introduces these names of places. It's actually quite casual. Vassi in San Leo, you can go up to San Leo, you can go to Noli, you can climb up to Bismantova or up the Cacume, but here you've got to fly. The contrast is, it seems to me, between the very purposeful travelling of Dante, the pilgrim, and Virgil, guided by hope and by light, and a casually described aimless travelling. It's hard not to think of the aimless wandering of exile, fruitlessly difficult, in contrast with the purposeful journey towards God, which the Commedia describes. It's also, of course, a purposeful journey which is undertaken with a guide, and shaped by the values of hope and light. The simple, vivid idea which opens the passage that we're looking at here, comparing the opening in the rock with an opening in a hedge which a farmer fills with thorns, I think it's also extremely rich. It is, of course, a simple and presumably quite familiar notion to Dante's readers, and it makes perfect sense in a way without any detailed consideration. But once you start thinking about it more carefully, the interest of the image really begins to emerge. First of all, the idea of a very narrow gap in the rock face, in a hedge, recalls, as commentators often remind us, the image in the Gospel of Matthew of the narrow gate. Narrow is the gate and straight the way that lead to life. That's Matthew 7:14. Similarly, as Robert Darling and Ronald Martinez remind us in their commentary to these lines, the idea of a grape harvest is used biblically to refer to the Last Judgment. And remember, the farmer is filling the gaps in his hedge at the moment when the grapes are becoming ripe, in other words, approaching the harvest. But there are still more ideas here. One of them relates back to the idea that I've been mentioning earlier in this item, the idea that the body and soul need to be seen as united. In this passage, which is of course so clearly concerned with the question of the body, the image of the grapes is particularly significant. Later on in Purgatorio, in Canto 25, the pilgrim and Virgil meet Statius, the Roman poet, who explains the way in which the human being is created. He describes the creation of the fetus, which forms the shape of the body, and as soon as the brain has been created within the fetus, God turns to it, breathes into it a new spirit, which is described as being replete with power, di virtù repleto, in 972 there. That new spirit, breathed into the body by God, draws into itself what it finds active there, and becomes a single soul. Now, it's a very complicated explanation in Canto 25, and I hope there'll be a chance to talk about it in more detail in a later item. But the important thing I really want to highlight here is that Statius recognises that this is a hard concept that he's been explaining, and he says that in order to make his words less wondrous, less difficult, the pilgrim should look at il calor del sol che si fa vino, giunto all'omor che della vite cola, at how the heat of the sun becomes wine when it's joined with the liquid that flows from the grape, lines 77 to 78. In other words, the body and the soul are as closely linked as the sunshine is linked to the wine that flows from the grapes. So in describing the difficulty of the climb, Dante is also anticipating that very memorable image that is going to be used in the poem later to describe the union of body and soul. The difficulty of the climb, then, is both physical and spiritual. Okay, it's body and soul together. There's still more, though. I've already mentioned some of the biblical allusions of the image used by Dante here to describe this gap, okay, especially to do with vineyards. But the idea of a vineyard also makes us think of perhaps the central event in medieval Christian life, the Eucharist, the wine which is the blood of Christ. For medieval Christians, the blood of Christ saves human beings. In Canto 23 of Purgatory, a soul says that Christ ne libero con la sua vena, he set us free with his vein. So in comparing the passageway here as or with a gap in a hedge through which there is a vineyard, there's a hint too that the movement through the hedge is also a movement towards the sacrament, towards the Eucharist, towards the salvation brought through the body and blood of Christ. Actually, I think this is more than just a hint, for a couple of reasons. One, the idea of the body and blood of Christ should really be in our minds at this point anyway, because the pilgrim and Virgil have been leaving, or are in the process of leaving, the area of the excommunicated in Antipurgatory. In other words, they're leaving behind those who had been excluded from the church, and as such from participating in the Eucharist. And remember, in these lines, Dante mentions that they have left behind that crowd, and it's just Dante and Virgil walking at this moment. And secondly, we can think about the way in which Dante sets up the image of the passage in our heads. What he describes is not a clear route through the passage, but he compares it to a gap in the hedge which is actually blocked. And blocked with what? With una forcatella di spine, with a forkful of thorns. So to reach the vineyard, you have to pass through thorns. Now, I think this strengthens even further the idea of the body and blood of Christ, because the thorns make us think of the crucifixion of Christ, and in particular, the way in which Christ at the crucifixion was made to wear a crown of thorns. Another way of putting this might be this. In order to ascend the mountain, in order to reach God, in order to get to the vineyard, which is in the terms of the imagery used by Dante, on the other side of the hedge, through the passage, You have to pass through the spine, the thorns, the suffering of Christ. This idea that you have to become Christ-like, you have to become, in a sense, one with Christ, is going to be extremely important in the Commedia as a whole. We've already had a hint of this a few lines earlier on in the poem. Manfred, in lines 110 to 112 of the previous canto, displays his wounds to the pilgrim, just as Christ displays his wounds, after the resurrection, to his disciples. And here the idea is hinted at quite subtly, but it's nonetheless clearly there. So if I can draw all this together, I'd like to conclude by simply reflecting on the way in which, as so often, Dante is using very simple ideas which can lead us into the bigger themes. On one level, he's just saying, Virgil and I started climbing up through a steep, very narrow passageway. And he uses vivid, concrete, quite everyday language and imagery to describe this. But he's also doing a lot more. He's approaching, precisely through that imagery, themes of the highest intellectual and theological sophistication. It's only by lingering over the imagery, by going into a sort of depth of reading which is beyond the superficial, that we can begin to see this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Leeds Centre for Dante Studies. If you'd like to find out more about the centre and its activities, please visit www.leeds.ac.uk.